Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Today is Thursday, 30th of April, 2020. The number to call, 434-1790 or 266-4862 if you have any WhatsApp messages. We go until 2 p.m. today with Mr. John Stout as our producer. I'm Lisa Gale. I will be your moderator for today. And we will be talking about anything that is of particular importance to you. We know we are still in a crisis. We do have a number of predicted months ahead, varying in different proportions. And I'm sure you will be calling us, sharing your thoughts. Just yesterday, we heard our Prime Minister talk to one of the noted journalists, international journalists, Ms. Christine Annan-Poor, and shared a bit about Barbados. But she didn't speak only within the context of Barbados. She spoke also as head of CARICOM, and she was able to speak very intelligibly about a number of matters that are of particular import to us in the region. I was beaming, I must say, as she responded to the various questions, some difficult, some simple, but I thought she remained herself with lots of composure, very brilliant in her analysis and in her responses, and I was very proud as a Barbadian to hear our Prime Minister share from the perspective, not just as a small island in the Atlantic Ocean or the Caribbean Sea, but as one of an archipelago, sharing the particular vulnerabilities and peculiarities of us as a regional bloc. And I was very proud yesterday to hear the Honorable Prime Minister, Ms. Mia Amor-Motley, share with the CNN international journalist. And then just a few hours later, we heard the Prime Minister at 7 p.m., well, 7:10 p.m. to be exact, and just before 9, conclude on a range of matters as we go through the crisis of the COVID-19. Again, she articulated where we are. She shared about the eases. She talked about a whole host of matters. And if you are following, there are several WhatsApp posts that have shared some summaries. And then today's paper, Nation newspaper, also shares them in pretty clear and concise manner, some of the scenarios that will play. But primarily, we are stressing that the safety measures must be maintained. And I think coming from all of what the national address shared last night, we are going to see a phased reopening, not only of businesses, but as well the public service entities. We understand that school will resume on Monday, albeit online, and the economy will have a stimulus package that is intended to inject some life in the economy. And only this morning I heard, I think it was BBC, talk about the shrinking. It was BBC or it was, I think it was VOB actually, Voice of Barbados, talk about the size of the U.S. economy, which has shrunk for the first time in several years. They said, I think they said decades for the first time, and this is because of the impact of COVID-19. So a number of scenarios. I was particularly pleased. I think the biggest takeaway for me as an international trade consultant is the consultation that took place. It wasn't mentioned in any broad measure, but if you had time to hear the SAGICO Early Business this morning, you would hear the chair of the private sector, Mr. Ed Clark, talk about some of the proposals that they would have shared over the weeks and within recent times. And again, a constant thread that is often forgotten is the ongoing work that goes on behind the scenes amidst the social partners. So I really want to give hats to those players, particularly the private sector and the unions and government. I think all three partners have stepped up in a magnanimous way, and they have been meeting, they have been sharing. And as Mr. Ed Clark said this morning, there's some things that we don't agree with. There's some things that we did not submit but were on the cards, and then there's some things that we submitted on the cards that were modified. So it tells me that consultation continues to go on. I remember the last time I was here in the chair, just that same week, there was discussion about the unions haven't had a meeting as yet with the Minister of Education, and before the end of the week, and it was already on the cards, but it was just that that particular caller was not aware of what was going on behind the scenes. So I really want to take my hat off to those persons who continue to consult. And then and out of the consultation, and we heard some of the cries only just a couple weeks ago, there are persons who have faithfully for years paid in their national insurance claims for their employees. But now that we have had business stop business halt, they are not benefiting. Their employees are, but they are suffering away. And it then shares that there has been a hole or a loophole in the NIS takings or in the whole construct of how NIS has been receiving these funds. And then we got someone from the NIS to come and share what the funds were specific towards, what the payments were towards, and business cessation was not included in that. And government has heard those cries, and now persons can benefit. A whole 2,800, the Prime Minister said last night, are now able to draw $1,500 in April, and $1,500 for May. So it tells me that there is a listening that is ongoing. And even as it relates to the small businesses who are not paying into the NIS, are operating, of course, week by week based on what has been coming into them, whether we call them the beauty care professionals, whatever you call them, we have persons who take care of your lawns, et cetera, a whole host of persons who are what we call off the radar to some extent. They're not at any VAT threshold. They're not necessarily employing anyone, and therefore they're not members of they're not party to the NIS, et cetera. And they too have been dealt a significant blow, and I understand that there's some soft loans now that they can draw down on, et cetera. So as we go through this all-encompassing crisis, I am hoping for the continued consultation, which I'm proud to see that is taking place. But then there are some persons who themselves have said they're off the radar generally, and they themselves are suffering. So what my call here is now secondarily is for other persons to also look out for those other persons, whether they're family members. But remember, this big crisis is that we want to make sure that the health of the nation, not just the economy, but the health of the people in the nation, that health is taken care of and is safeguarded. So let us continue to do what we are supposed to do. Let us do what the health officials have shared with us. And I also send my condolences to the family of the latest victim of COVID-19. This is Dr. Brass Tacks.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Ms. Gill. A couple of things here. Last night, while listening to the Prime Minister address to the nation, I have come to the conclusion that it was too long. And what she said could take at least an hour and 15 minutes. And as usual in her style, she has to go back to what would have taken place 2 or 3 years ago.
You're still there?
Yeah, hello? Hello?
As usual in her presentation, that's the last thing I heard from you.
Yeah, she would have gone back to what she usually do in her own style, take us back to what would have happened 2 or 3 years ago if this had occurred, and that the government offices would be closed down, and we'll have the government workers only $400 million in foreign reserve.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like her to tell the people in Barbados, mm-hmm, how much money did they borrow to properties for reserves? Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I realized...
So that's your first one. How much money did they borrow? You're going fast. Yes?
Yeah, to properties for reserves.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said, my old granny always said, boss not what would they borrow, but boss but what they owe. And the other thing, what she... And I was listening for her. We have, in Barbados, 80 positive cases.
Yes.
There were 7 deaths. And the population is around 300,000 people. I want you to work out that the amount of deaths as a percentage on your phone. Tell me what is the percentage.
Say that again.
There's 80 positive cases in Barbados.
You want me to work out on my phone the percentage of deaths?
There are 7 deaths. And what is the percentage of deaths that we are having so far? No, I'm listening to you. I'm still listening to your reply.
Oh, you right, which is what I asked you to repeat, because I'm having challenges hearing you.
Okay, there are 80 known cases in Barbados,
mm-hmm,
that were tested positive.
Right.
Out of those 80 cases, there are 7 deaths. I asked you as a percentage, how much is that?
Oh, you put 80 over the number of the population?
Right.
And then you multiply it by 100. If you want to find out what the percentage of deaths, what not deaths, that's contractions.
Right.
If you want to find out of deaths, you put 7 over 80.
We know that, but I am asking you to so that you allow roll and the stats.
Sir, sir, you're talking to me directly. When Rob calls, he calls. Just deal with it.
What I'm trying to tell you, out of a population of 300,000, it's a fairly high rate. And this
you
is
mean the 80 out of the 300,000?
The deaths. I'm looking at the deaths. The deaths.
Okay. Deaths per contraction.
Yes. The people that are dying. Is a high rate for a population of over 300,000 per capita. For 10,000 per capita. And I will let you to explain that to Rawl when he comes on the phone. Right? Rawl and his stat man.
Suppose what was Rawl's last name? Suppose today's his day and he has to be out and he doesn't have any time. He has to go and get him one of those long lines and doesn't have any time to call the program today.
Right, but school starts on Monday, online school. You can listen to that with Uncle Jeff. I still work out those things. Thank you, Miss Gay.
You want to be naughty, my first caller today, I realize. But you have concluded that it is a high rate.
Yes. Before I go, Miss Gay.
Yes.
I have a friend there, old lady friend, and she has written a letter to the people in charge of the National Assistant Board, which I help her with this letter because she don't have a laptop or desktop or any sort of top. To inform her that she does not want the assistance of the worker any longer.
That she does not want the
assistance. She doesn't want the worker to come around her place any longer. Although the people were tested.
Well, I did hear some of that yesterday. That person have a fear.
Right, right. We will be informing MP Cynthia Ford about the decision that my old lady friend has taken.
And who has she written? Who has she spoken to?
She will get in contact with Cynthia Ford.
Okay, but there has to be someone. Ms. Ford is the minister, but there has to be someone in the ministry of the NAB.
Office. I will look for the email and I will send an email to them.
So, why you didn't do that yesterday when she reached out to you?
Because
you wanted to come on Brass Stats to.
We did not go into the details. Because I'm looking for some help to myself, but I have changed my mind because I'm a person.
You're a troublesome man. I wish you a beautiful day down to Brass Stats. Down to Brass Stats. We had one caller earlier who shared his perspective on last night, and then he also talked about the percentages. I was nowhere near my calculator, and I wasn't hearing him well. So just to say that if we take the 8 out of the 80, then that would actually be 10% of the infected cases that have a mortality rate. So if he says it's high, it is high. But I do leave those numbers to the health experts to say out of the 1,000, because you do it out of the per 1,000. And it is relatively high. Any 10% is always pretty high. Down to Brass Stats, let's hear our next caller. Good morning. You're on the air, good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Gill.
Good morning.
You're hearing me clear?
I'm hearing you very clear.
Yeah, we're all here.
You heard somebody call your name and you decided to pick up the phone and call Brass Stats? Or you were in line? Tell us all. Were you in line?
I was in line. You mean in line? You mean with the call or in the...
If you had called prior to your name being called.
I had called prior.
Okay.
I was in line. Then.
Yes, okay.
I was on hold. a moderator said to me some years ago,
mm-hmm.
I made a comment, and his comment to me was... I would like to comment with you a morning when they're down at the beach. So a gentleman hastily called in and said, why the gentleman is on a calling program and you don't want to respond to him publicly? You want to get him down by the beach that you could curse him?
Oh, no.
Yeah, right? The gentleman said that in defense of how he responded to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I am full of decorum.
Oh, lovely. Applaud. I applaud you.
I always advocate decorum on the calling. Over 37 years I've been now calling. No one can ever accuse me of being indignant.
Well, only on the calling.
No. I'm saying, let me get this properly. I'm saying, we're dealing program here. and I referenced the caller and the moderator, et cetera. Okay. I'm saying I've never been indignant on the call-in program, and I'm not even going to use any euphemism.
Mm-hmm.
All I say in short, no comment, sir. I regard you. Let me take it up.
With dignity, with dignity.
Yeah, let me take up your side of things this morning. I must commend you and congratulate you with your ethics on morning, Barbados. You are so clear.
Well, you were up that early? You were up that early yesterday morning?
Yes, I was up.
Whoa.
yes, I was up. And I watched, and I say, can I put a face to this voice? And it gave me a little infectious laugh at times, too. Not any big rare. I said, well, here's Miss Lisa Gilner. Mm. Yeah, it was clear and very informative.
Okay.
And you, if you believe in what we will call professionalism, it was borne out strongly in everything that you would have said.
Oh, very good.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, etiquette. So, that's the intention.
Etiquette. Mm-hmm. Yes. Very clear. Congrats. No.
Thank you.
Question to you, ma'am, this morning. Do you feel? But let me preface by saying this before you say anything. I have not listened to Miss Molly until I started, and then I drop off to sleep. I get all the information today via the print media, and I'll go get some off JS, et cetera, to make a real thorough analysis. But I've been on to this even before Miss Molly's speech last night. And my question to you now is, do you feel that government should bear the brunt of all of the layoff, et cetera, itself, and all the private sector go free? Now, I said this, and I asked this to a moderator yesterday, and I'll ask you the question today, the same question. I'll give you a chance to respond. I'll give you a chance to respond, and then I'll give my perspective as how I see it and my gut feeling on it. And I've been always assertive and relentless. I'll listen to you, and then I'll give my perspective.
Right, so it's just one sentence. You asked me if I feel the government should bear the brunt of all the unemployment in Barbados.
Of the layoffs, et cetera, itself, and I leave the private sector to go free.
No, and that's not what is happening. And as you know, even when you are working, you pay some funds into the NIS, and your employer pays some funds into the NAS coffers.
Yeah.
And then on an occasion, either you as a female get pregnant, or as a male-female you get injured, or you get sick, or whatever happens, you can draw on those funds. So it's not a government-only burden. The funds are put in to start. The point I'm making is that the genesis of the funds is not government. So even if government has to pay from the NAS coffers, it is not only government that is bearing that brunt. One. Two, in a scenario where we have a crisis, I think all parties should lift some weight. And that is exactly what's happening right now. And if you look at we would have been told around the 27th of March that we're going to go on some stricter measures, what you call lockdown. And there was a discussion in the public, you would recall, because it was here on Brass Tacks as well, about whether employers can force someone to go on vacation. And we know they can't force them, but they can recommend, but they have to give at least 2 weeks' notice. We know that. However, the crisis is lasting, or the lockdown time period is lasting a little longer. And even although the comments from the Attorney General at the time, which were specific and accurate and well within right, while it is legal that an employer cannot send an employee on immediate vacation, it is well within the employer's right to offer the employee vacation as a means of softening the pain for the employee at a time when we know that this crisis is going to last a little longer. So while it is legally right, so in other words, I can't come, let me give you case in point. I'm Lisa A, or I'm employee A. And then there's employee B. And we were told this on the 27th. And let's say the 28th, there was a discussion in the office. And the employer put the options on the table. And employee A says, I prefer to go on vacation, which was the recommendation from the employer. But employee B says, No, you can't put me on vacation. The law says that I have to go on, you have to give me notice. But then we heard, so they go automatically on, they have to, not really suffer, but they have to go through another option. Remember, there were several options that were put on the table.
Yeah.
You can go get your money from NAS, etc. But the employer genuinely was trying to soften the pain. And while it is legally right for employee B to say they're going to go off, who suffers most?
It would be the employee
B that would suffer, because they are now. I mean, yes, vacation is down the road. You want to have vacation. You don't want to be taken. You don't want your rights to be taken away. But think about it. Why do you want to have now to wait on the NAS that's going to take you 2 weeks or 3 weeks or maybe even longer to get these funds when you could have gone on vacation and got a normal paycheck at the end of this month? So some people aren't seeing it from the perspective of the employer. But back to your point, that was just an aside. Back to your point.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe that there should be any one person feeling all the pain. And I'm also telling you that that's not what's happening.
Okay. My turn now. My perspective here will come out. I am saying that I applaud the government, and particularly so. I would always applaud the government and the gesture of assistant persons, etc. But I've been on this from in the 80s, has been my position. One of my strong tenets is like, there's certain, I'm philosophical, everybody understands that. But I say to you, you see this thing you call a means test? At this juncture, where COVID has struck, abruptly, where COVID has struck abruptly and thrust the world into a tailspin, I am going to carry the means test because I am saying, this has been my argument with the wrong people getting houses, et cetera, and housing all back then. Still the same disposition of view. I am saying there's certain people that will meet the means test, and some people cannot. And that is my take on going forward for all who will come to government cap in hand and say, look, they're businesses, and we know them. They've been in business for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. If some argument is going to be advanced that their books, this and that, why didn't they close? But they're in 40 years, you know. And when the year comes, they make a profit, you know. And we know the businesses. But you're going to hear now, person's going to get laid off, tourism down, this, that. Restaurants, hotels, and things. Make a lot of foreign exchange via the foreign currencies that come in and things. And they make money. But you're going to find, because the government can't call for your books and tell you, come to me clear and clean, don't let me catch you cooking your books. Everybody's going to go under the guise. It hit me hard, and I buckle. I know in dire straits. I am saying, ma'am, I will advocate, and I am not going to remove myself from this. I mean, sense for person and for business cannot lead you wrong.
And all right, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. You're well within your right, and I think means tests are useful. I think more and more, given where we are socioeconomically, we have been doing some means tests, but not on a broad enough scale. And because in small societies, means tests aren't as successful successful as they should be because of the nature of small societies. I wouldn't go any further there. But on the other point, I know that people always treat employers as villains. Some of them are. There's no question there. But you must understand some of the costs, the inherent costs that employers have to bear. People look on and they think that sales equate to profits, and they don't consider all of the other costs. But I'll stop there. But thank you for your call. You have shared your perspective. I really want to focus. I mean, not only just me, but I must say that I have, over the last 2 weeks, having last sat in this chair, been made aware of a significant increase in the levels of unemployment across the length and breadth of Barbados in ways and proportions that I said last time, and I say it again, we have not even yet seen the impact of this. If you look at a big pool of transparent water and you throw some purple liquid in it, you know that the purple liquid is going to get far and far away at some point. And I see that the impact of this crisis is impacting on people's pockets in ways that we haven't even even started to consider. And there's some employers out there that are not even, as they wait to hear from government, some of them, let's say, saw furnishings, given that that was number two on the list yesterday of the persons who have to wait until the 18th of May. Let's say you have an entity and you have people on hold, you can't pay them. There are people out there who are literally suffering, both at the household level as well as at the business level. So we can't only look at it from this perspective that, you know, businesses are villains or employers only out to get, you know, yes, they're in business for profit maximization, but they're persons who have hearts, they're persons who have relationships with their staff members, and persons who genuinely care. I want to have a little conversation a bit about employment and about the impacts of this large increase in unemployment in the country. And we have a labor specialist, Ms. Brittany Braffitt. I tried to reach her earlier, and I think she's on ear to share with us a bit on that subject. Dr. Brassatz, good morning.
Hi, Lisa. How are you doing?
Hi, doing well. Doing well, Brittany. You just heard our last caller, and he just kind of reflected on his thoughts on whether or not government should bear the burden. I hope you had an opportunity to hear the Prime Minister last night on some of the measures that were put in place for our employers and employees. Yes. Could you share a little bit on your thoughts? I'm going to ask you one or two questions, but if you can share first your perspective on the measures that have been put in place as it relates to employment and softening that, yes, that pain.
I think the measures, in the context of what we see regionally and even internationally, measures are really first class. I was quite pleased with particularly the measure that treats to entrepreneurs, mm-hmm, and those persons who, and I want to reiterate this because a few persons called me this morning, mm-hmm, asking whether everybody could apply for the $1,500 subsidy that will be offered.
Only those who paid in.
Right.
She was very specific. If you don't pay, right? Continue, sorry.
Very, very, very clear, mm-hmm, that subsidy or that benefit.
It's called the business cessation benefit, yes.
Correct.
And it's a one-time one. Yes, only available.
Well, I think it's available for 2 months.
Right, it's one-time as in only for COVID. But they will consider futuristic, asking people to pay more, or there has to be a discussion and some consultation on that. But I'm glad that you raised that as well, because that was one of my takeaways from last night.
Right. But to be very clear, it that benefit is available to those persons who prior to COVID, mm-hmm, would have been registered as self-employed persons with the National Insurance Scheme.
Yes.
And who would have, had their schedules and their up-to-date and their contributions up-to-date.
Yes.
So no, it is not a benefit that is open to everyone.
Yes.
I think the Prime Minister was able to quote the exact number of
2,800
persons.
2,800, you mentioned.
There we go.
Yeah. I zoomed in very, very, very carefully there because I knew of some persons who have paid faithfully over the years and have employees who are benefiting, but they themselves are suffering. And I was glad to hear that there was some consideration given to that, because the NIS was very clear that the benefits that are paid in do not speak to business cessation. So that's a good one there.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So that was a really good takeaway from last night. And I also think the move to have persons who are collecting their unemployment benefits, collect those in lump sums. Mm. That's a tremendous benefit to those persons as well. Now, as you just said, and I was listening to you just before I joined, mm-hmm, the magnitude in terms of the number of job losses, it is a tremendous amount. Mm-hmm. And processing the claims are not an easy thing. So I think there are a lot of persons out there who just need to be patient. Okay. But I'd like to jump in here and make mention to those persons who may be receiving checks that are, not of any significant amount, that mm-hmm, there are lots of variables that are put into place and are considered when you receive an unemployment benefit. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are a person who may have taken a significant amount of certified sick leave, mm-hmm, within the last 3 quarters or within the last year, mm-hmm, of your employment, and even before then, you have to consider that has an implication on the benefit that you receive, because Now, the unemployment, national insurance, well, it has separate funds.
Mm-hmm.
As an individual, your contributions are looked at, you know, individualistic, in an individualistic manner.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if you would have been pulling from the fund, let's say for 3 or 4 months last year or 6 months, you can anticipate that what is left in your individual fund for unemployment. Yeah. So so there are some persons, I've seen a number of people posting, you know, that they may have gotten a $25 check or a $5 check, etc. So I implore persons, and as they go to the National Insurance Scheme or even as they fill out what they need to fill out online, to, you know, ask detailed questions about what your contribution rate, what your contribution and what your requisite benefit will look like at this juncture.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that you know so you're not shocked.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't track their pay slips anyway. So they, you know, they receive the deductions coming out and and or they never went to NIS outside of this period and asked the question. You know, there we go.
Well, that takes me to the second. I have a point close to that, but not related. What about those persons who pay NAS? Don't take sick leave, but their salaries are so small that they do not benefit from a payment at this point.
An unemployment payment?
Yeah. What about that? And they are unemployed. Your business has come to a stop. There's no need for that particular set of employees anymore.
Right.
And those persons went, they applied, there was a form received by the same employer, but they now are told, no, they don't qualify.
So before I answer that question, I just wanted to also, on the flip side, as I was giving advice to employees, give some advice to employers.
Mm-hmm.
National Insurance, the National Insurance Scheme has asked all employers, even if your contribution rates are not up to date, please submit your schedule.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Please submit your schedules, because a lot of people are seeing delays in the receipt of their unemployment benefit. And it's not necessarily as a result of the unemployment forms not being submitted, but the schedules are may be behind.
Yeah.
So when unemployment gets to process an employee's claim and they realize you've not submitted a schedule in the past quarter, you know, it won't be processed. And I'm not sure, well, I can't speak to the internal workings, but I can't imagine that they have enough people in there to be consistently calling and telling an employer at this time, you know, call, submit your schedules, etc. Now, to your initial or to your primary question, though, I would say, sorry, I lost my train of thought because I was giving you advice there.
It was really for persons who apply for unemployment but are told they're not eligible, could be because their salaries are too small, whatever.
Not necessarily that the salaries may be too small. It may have been a case where persons were not earning weekly and or monthly enough to have the NIS taken out.
No. This I'm speaking of a specific case, but I'm broadening it because I'm sure that that's not the only case. What if you were paying NIS? Let's say you had a job for the last 3-4 years. And you're paying NAS. You haven't gone on any sick leave. You go to work religiously. Your salary is a small salary. And you now fall into this. And you've been paying NAS and you now fall into this category, but you're told you cannot benefit from NAS at this point.
Told by NAS? NAS would have told you.
Yes. That one sounded strange.
It does sound strange. And again, as you would know, I don't like to give definitive advice on situations where I don't have the full, all the information.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say that NIS may be wrong or that the employee may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But if I look at the missing variables here, was it that it may be less about the size or the amount of the employee's salary, and it may be more about the quarters of submission? So was the employee working for long enough?
In those instances... All right, I will take that offline with you, and we can chat about that. But it is a group of persons in a workplace, and I want you to get some feedback on that. I didn't push it any further because at that time I didn't have all of the details, but I will speak to you further on that. The other question I have for you as it relates to the treatment of, remember earlier in the month, we were dealing with this only 2 weeks. We've subsequently had an extension for another 2 weeks. And now we are told some companies can go back, but some can't go back. That six-week period is going to be a difficult time for both employee and employer. I want to hear your thoughts on that.
When you say some companies can go back, oh, you mean to restart?
To resume, yes. Resume work, yeah.
And no. Companies will have to be clear persons about what will happen. Mm-hmm. I saw a very detailed list come out from the public sector as to, you know, when some offices will be reopening, et cetera, and what would be the exemption for those persons who may sit in vulnerable groups, as the Prime Minister spoke to yesterday.
Yeah.
I think the private sector and companies in the private sector should aim to similarly, you know, do the same. If you have people on layoff, mm-hmm. communicate to those persons, you know, whether that layoff will obtain even beyond the May 18th period, because there are some other variables here. While we may be reopening, there are some companies who literally may not have the revenue to reopen.
That's right.
There we go. So I think every company needs to be guided by its ability, but they just need to ensure that they're communicative with staff about, and those staff who are at this point working remotely. I know personally there are still some of my clients who are doing rotations of layoffs, and that will not stop.
Mm-hmm.
Not even, you know, at the May 18th juncture. So everybody is pretty much focusing on May 18th, but a lot of private sector entities will start on May 18th with a very skeletal staff.
Yes.
What needs to be communicated to staff is, you know, who can stay at home, who's expected to come out, will layoff periods be extended, will we still be cycling layoff periods for the next 3 months, even beyond that reopening period?
Mm-hmm.
Will there be any restructuring? I think now that we have, you know, a bit more clarity as to the phases that the reopening will take, businesses can plan a little better.
Yes.
Obviously, that, I mean, even the Prime Minister in this case can't say directly that we will in fact reopen on May 18th, because, you know, it's a pandemic, anything could happen. But I think at least businesses can plan a bit better and communicate to staff what the plans are, now that they have that data in mind.
Yes. That's useful. If you have anything else to share with us from labor, employment, unemployment, any of the other above, I'll give you a final word.
Sure. So I think the one thing that we're not talking about, but it's been brought up, I'm not sure how we will treat to it, is the informal sector in Barbados.
Yes.
So yes, we have entrepreneurs, and yes, we have, you know, persons who own businesses, large, medium, and small. But the informal sector in Barbados is a big sector. We don't have a definitive percentage on that sector. The UNDP estimates it makes up about 30% of our workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sector may be the sector that, outside of tourism and some other industries, that will take quite a hard hit.
Indeed.
So I think we have to be thinking from an employment standpoint, and from a moral standpoint, what we are going to do with that informal sector. And the informal sector, as informal as it is, also employs people.
Yes.
Even if they're cattle.
And while it has a certain level of resilience, there is that scenario, you know, if the larger economy or the bigger pie is suffering, they also suffer as well. As there's innovation and resilience that make up the hallmark of the informal sector.
Yes, but, that's correct.
Yeah. But thanks so much, Ms. Brittany Bradford. You have shared with us quite a bit on Down to Brass Stats.
Thank you.